If you want to know the secret to happiness, I can give it to you in one word. Progress. Progress equals happiness. Tony Robbins.
Some motivation. Motivation. Every day I try a little harder, but my dedication. Keep my head way, way above the water. Crying myself when I yell at the wall. Begging to run, but I needed to crawl. I see the finish line up ahead. Trying to get traction from all of this tread. I am a kid.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Welcome back to the podcast that helps you be the leader. And whether you've been around for a little while or you're a new listener, listen, this is the show that's going to help you step up and lead your team to victory. And you know, in that battle, it's going to be an uphill fight. You're going to go through tons of adversity, tons of challenges, some failures. And in order to help you and take that team and help them succeed, we've decided to equip you with some tools, some strategies and tactics that will equip you to lead them to victory. Okay, we're going to talk about things like leadership, high performance, goal setting and achievement, and overall success so that you can conquer the battle ahead and win. Now, I'm Jeremiah Sullivan, and I'm your host, and today is going to be an awesome episode. It's going to be a very special one, and we're going to talk about something that needs to be talked about a little bit more in today's world, and that's the word happiness. You know, I find that many people are unhappy. You know, maybe they're clocking in, clocking out, coming home, going to work, coming home, and they're putting in a full day of work, but deep down inside, they're miserable. And I believe that it comes down to a few core things. I think it comes down to either burnout, it comes down with dealing with uncertainty, and it comes down to just simply not making a decision that could potentially change their situation and drive them to a job or a situation that could make them happy. So maybe there's other reasons why people aren't so happy these days, but those are the key things that we're going to dive into today. And I'm excited to talk about this subject and to teach on it and give you guys some insight into ways that you can become more happy regardless of the work you have, the job that you have. And even if the things are going well in your life, this is going to be a great show to elevate your level of happiness. And in order to dive in and really do a good job here, I'm not doing this show by myself. I'm doing it with my co-host, the Podfather himself, Mr. Justin Phillips. Come on in, dude. What's up, man?
Jeremiah, I have a question for you.
Oh, you're not going to interrupt me this time and like start clapping and just like start shaking.
Am I allowed to talk about the people can't see? Am I allowed to talk about these on the podcast or are they like exclusive?
Those are secret squirrel classified, top secret. No, you can go ahead.
Well, talk about it. So my question, you see my little display here.
For everybody that's like listening, Justin is holding up.
Getting to it.
Okay, go ahead. Do it.
But yes, I'm holding up this little medallion, I guess you could call it coin. I hear it. My question that I'm going to ask you is this modeled after, like, is this a military thing? Do you get these similar type of things in the military? Is that where this came from?
Yeah. So that what you're holding there is called a challenge coin.
Okay.
And that's what they're called in the military. They are typically given to commanders and higher inside of the military. And they are tokens of appreciation for basically a job well done. And, you know, as when I was a light infantry company commander, I would have those. And if we did a ceremony and we recognized guys for outstanding performance, we would have a handful of those. And I would recognize select soldiers that were nominated by the different leaders and NCOs that were in the organization. So the short answer is, yeah, it's a challenge coin. And on that one specifically, it has Conquer Academy on the one side, and on the back, we put our core values. So what you put on the challenge coin can vary from unit to unit, but typically you put the unit insignia or the emblems on the front and back sides of those coins for the soldier to carry as a token of appreciation.
Cool. Right. So my follow-up question to that was going to be like, how do you display them when you get them in the military? Because I've had the little silver one just like chilling on my desk for however long I've had it now.
Yeah.
And then I got the little gold one and I was like, and they were both just chilling on my desk. I'm like, these need to go somewhere. So I bought these little.
Those are good. I like the little plaques that you have them in. So that is a way. The other way, if in the military, like I have, my wife got me a gift one time. I don't know what it was. It was a Christmas gift or something like that, but it's basically a coin holder and it is probably maybe a foot wide by a foot tall. And then there's, you know, rows inside of it and you could put several of them inside of there. And so, yeah, you showcase them and you put them in places where you can see them. But You're supposed to carry one on you at all times.
Okay.
Now here's the rule. We
just don't, to weigh you down, because that thing's like 72 pounds.
Yeah, you're supposed to put it in your wallet, and you're supposed to carry it on your wallet. But you know, to each his own. You can do what you want with it and keep it on the wall. That's fine. But the military, there was a tradition that everyone was supposed to carry their a challenge coin on them. And if you didn't have it when you were out at the restaurant, the bar or whatever, and you were caught without your coin, you had to buy everybody else drinks. That was the rule in the military. But I think it's appropriate for you just to keep it on the wall there, unless you really want to put it in your pocket.
That really gives me the same energy of like shit they'll do in the Boy Scouts too.
Yeah.
The camp and stuff. Yeah, like, I don't know, with any random thing.
Well, you know, it's interesting the ones that people keep on them. Sometimes they tell you to put one in there from your last unit. Other times you just keep the one that's sentimental to you. I've had the same coin in my wallet for almost a decade now.
Sounds right.
You want to take a guess?
It's the Conquer Academy one.
It's not the Conquer Academy one. I competed in the Army's Best Ranger competition, which for me, it was a huge failure.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I think I've told the story on the podcast before, but the bottom line is that it's a 3-day event. My team got cut on the second day, and it was a rude awakening moment for me about just a lot of things in life. I just felt like I was coming up short, and it compounded and everything. So I carry that coin, this time where I had a huge failure in my life. I carry that on me every single day. And the reason why is because it reminds me, what Best Ranger taught me was how much more I had inside of me than I thought I did. I went further, faster, and just did more than I ever thought possible during that competition. I mean, you're talking to a guy that at one point in time, running 2 miles was a lot for me. And I went, we did like, I don't know how many miles, 50, 60 plus miles in that 2 days or whatever. And most of it was with a rucksack on. So anyways, the positive that came from that event was I learned a lot about myself, and I carry that little token of failure to remember how much more I have inside of me. That's why I carry that one.
Yeah. That's really cool too, because the folks that are getting these Conquer Academy ones from Quest or Connects or wherever they happen to end up, a lot of them are coming back with the exact same feedback. You know, they're like, this is the event where I figured out like I'm fucking capable of more.
Yeah. That's so good to hear. Well, I'm, you know, I think a lot of people are capable of more than they allow themselves to realize. And I think that's why a lot of them are unhappy. Look at that segue right into today's topic, huh?
Yeah.
No, but hey, all jokes aside, I do think that, I do want to dive into today's subject. And I mentioned before, we're gonna talk a little bit about happiness, but in order to do that, I think it's important for us to both kind of share some things about where we're at in life and what's going on in our worlds, because it'll really shape the conversation about things like burnout, things about happiness, things you know, to do with decision making. So I want to dive into that a little bit first as we kick this thing off. Okay. So Justin, let's start off with like what's new in your world. Let's talk about that first.
Yeah. So if we backtrack a couple of weeks, I was talking about like, oh, I quit my job, and I was like, oh, maybe I'll get a new job, and then I got a new job, and now I quit that job. So that's the long and short of what's new in my world. It's kind of old in my world, right? Because when I got out of school, I was actually doing the freelance video podcast production, that type of thing, full time for about a year, I think. You know, it was kind of my main source of income. And then I was like, I'm going to get a job so that way I can put all the money from the business back into the business, was the essence of doing that. And now we're back up to here to where it's almost come full circle. It's like, okay, now I'm back to doing this thing full time. But, you know, it's really come with a lot of like, I have bills now, and I have really good months in the business, and I have really dry months in the business. And it's been leading me to a lot of uncertainty that I particularly was not expecting, which I guess is kind of the definition of uncertainty. But there is almost like planned uncertainty. The first time when I got out of school, I planned on it, things being pretty like shaky and rocky. And this time around, I was like, oh, I have this new secure thing lined up. And then it just vanished by my own doing.
Yeah. Well, I think what you're doing, guys, if you didn't catch everything that he just said, I mean, the key parts to hone in on is He got fed up with one job, said, you know what, screw this, I'm out. And then he went to another one. He thought that it was going to be a great place, a great community, whatever the hell. And walks in, he quit. I don't even want to say the word quit because it sounds kind of like against our culture, but no, it wasn't. He made a decision. I'm not going to work here. Yeah. And it was on day one. Walked right in on day one, right? Wasn't it?
I was on day two, technically, 9 a.m. Okay. On the second day. I was like, listen,
yeah,
this isn't going to work.
Okay. Yeah. So cut it quick on day two. And I know that there are so many people out there that are listening today that want to quit something. They want to walk away from something, whether it's a living situation, whether it's a job, whether it's a business that they started and they're not passionate about, whether it's a fitness endeavor. People out there everywhere are holding on to things that are making them unhappy, and they keep clinging to them, expecting their feelings and thoughts to change. And what I admire about what you just did is that you made a definite decision and you became decisive, and you walked away from something that you knew was dead weight, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. That's actually a really good point that you make, is that there is kind of a difference between quitting versus deciding not to blank. And that is true. Like, ultimately I decided against the job rather than really quitting it, I would say. And a lot of people need to do that. They probably feel like they're quitting with the thing that they should just be deciding, like, hey, I'm not going to do this anymore.
Yeah. I did an Instagram story coincidentally the same day that Justin told me about this, and we didn't even talk. And I did an Instagram story about how
we just like connect through the ether now.
Yeah. Dude, this has been happening all over the place, like with me recently, by the way, all kinds of serendipitous, like coincidental shit. But my point is, I did a story like, hey, ladies and gentlemen, if you are being held back by something that you really want to let go of, make today the day that you let go of it. Stop letting dead weight hold you down. Like, you need to get rid of that stuff and cut it. And I was like, if you're trying to get clear about whether you should cut something or not, the easiest thing that you can do is just simply say, does this thing make me happy? Yes or no. Does this contribute to my happiness? Yes or no. Am I happy doing this? Yes or no. And then think about the alternative. If you're going to do something different and that idea brings you happiness, but the thing you're in doesn't, well, it's a no-brainer. Now, I'm not encouraging a culture of chasing a situation where the grass is greener on the other side, or at least where you believe the grass is greener on the other side. That's a dangerous trap to fall into. In fact, the grass is always greener where you water it, not on the other side. However, deep down inside, everybody knows the things that they need to let go of. You see this a lot, even with, you see this in businesses all the time. You got an employee that's working there, doesn't want to be there. He's mentally checked out. He's at about 20 to 30% of productivity. He's just going in, clocking in, clocking out, catching a paycheck, calling it a day. And the company won't cut him and he won't cut himself. And so it's just this toxic relationship of the blind leading the blind, almost like just non-productivity, just after one day after the next. So I think it's amazing that you cut that thing. And I think that it's a great lesson for everybody to listen to. And I want to hear a little bit about how you made that decision, because it could lead to more happiness in other people's lives if they made the same decision. So talk about that.
Yeah. Well, something you just started getting into too, is that it was a very two-way decision for me, right? When you have that employee that's only given 20, 30%, he doesn't want to be there. He's not being very productive. That's not good for anyone. Like, him sticking around isn't good for him. It's not good for his employer either. In that case, the employer is too afraid to cut him. So they think, oh, he has family, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, the best thing you can do with that situation on either side is fucking change the situation, you know, and have him go, whether it's the guy quitting and being like, hey, I got to go do something else, or even the employer firing and just being like, listen, dude, you're not performing at your best here. And it would be a disservice to you at this point if we kept you around here. So that's large part of what led to my decision to leave this job, is that, like, it wasn't going to be good for me. It wasn't going to be good for them either. It's not like I went in, I was getting trained up. I didn't want them using all their resources, all their time, all my time, just all of everybody's time for me to just leave in 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, you know, down the line.
So how did you go? So you basically are saying that you made that decision to not only respect your time, but to respect theirs too.
Absolutely.
That's where did you learn the value of time? Where does that come from for you?
That's actually a really good question. Probably a lot from just I mean, being around you and a lot of the other people over the years, being around a lot of entrepreneurs in general, you read about them, like you probably know, like Dean Graziosi's thing about the guy cutting his lawn and that type of stuff. Like, I started to hear those stories. And I think just from experience after a while too, like the first time you spend your time doing one thing and, you know, working a deal basically versus spending your time DIYing everything. So I also grew up in a situation, right, where it was like, we didn't have a lot of money, and, but my dad could DIY fucking anything. And it was the way he lived. And I started realizing after I started listening to new information though, is that like the more time you spend doing everything and trying to save money, the more time you're not spending actually growing something. Yeah. And so I think it came to the point to me, it's like, I look at my time and it's like, I could still be like kind of being productive, but nothing's really growing, right? It's just like, I'm doing the standard, I'm hitting the bar, but if nothing's grow, if you're not growing, you're dying. Right. I think you brought that up last week, maybe. So I'm getting derailed here. I don't know where exactly. I can't pinpoint it to like, where
you're giving a lot of reasons. You're giving a lot of reasons. You're saying that you learned through self-study and studying successful entrepreneurs that they value time, and you adopted that perspective. You're also saying that you recognize an opportunity cost, that when you put your time into something that isn't going to grow what you want, that you're essentially just being a slave to the hamster wheel and you're not really going anywhere. And so it sounds like really you value growth, you value productivity. And through those things, you recognize the value of that job wasn't there. There just wasn't, it wasn't as useful for you. And in return, it would be wrong for you to invest time into that and not give them your absolute best. So you're just like, you know what, I'm going to walk away from this. I'm done with it. Mm-hmm. So I think that's very valuable. And I think everybody that's listening could re-listen to that over and over and over again and figure out a takeaway from that and apply it to their situation and weigh whether or not they should walk away from the thing that's in their life. Okay. I work with a lot of different, so in entrepreneurship, it's very interesting because I find that a lot of entrepreneurs have a similar track. They jump in because they're looking for something more out of life. They start working on businesses. They do this usually after encountering some sort of failure. Now, they're not all the same, but this is probably the average that I see. And they automatically, these are typically like the doers in life. They see that other people are succeeding in entrepreneurship and they just jump in. And what ends up happening is they look for the fastest path to cash. Right? That's what they do. I need some more money. I want to improve my lifestyle. I want more out of life. Let me just start a business. This will be easy. They jump in and they jump into stuff that isn't really meant for them. Mm-hmm. They just jump into things that they see others succeeding at.
Yes.
Right. And they look for the quick cash. At least this is what happened to me. I mean, and I see this happening all over the place, but, and then from there, they end up going through a lot of trial and error to figure out their sweet spot in business. And the funny thing is that by trying to find the shortcut to success, they take the longest path to it. It's so funny, man. And it's like the shortest path to success in any business, any career, is to not take the path of least resistance. It's to go uphill and just bite down on your mouthpiece, lean into the fight, and then go get that bludgeoning. So point being with all that is that I think that you're on a great track. That's an exceptional track that a lot of people can learn from. And if they would simply learn what to walk away from and stop looking for the quick fix, I think that they could get to where they want a lot faster and become a lot happier, you know?
Yeah. What I'm seeing myself run into right now is the world of not having a plan B.
Yeah.
That's something else that gets talked about. And so spread your take on that, because I know that one I can be on both sides of at any given moment in time, and I know it's relatively controversial for some people. Same thing with the concept of burning bridges, which is similar.
I will tell you that anytime so here's my thoughts on having a plan B and or having a plan B. If you have a plan B,
wait, hang on, you said plan B and or having a plan B and or burning a bridge.
Sorry. Okay, here what I meant to say was that here's my thoughts on only having a plan A or having a plan A and B.
Okay.
All right. My thoughts are that if you have a plan B that you think about a lot, that's really your plan A, and you're just too scared to admit it. Okay. I think that you're a person's, when you have too many options, you never fully commit to what you want. Okay. I think that every single person knows what they want inside of their core. They've just gotten so used to repressing it and talking themselves out of it. They never accept it as what they truly, truly want. I can just use MMA as an example for me. I said no to mixed martial arts for a long time in my life. But deep down inside, I knew I wanted it. But I repressed it. I said no, 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 no. And then it almost became difficult for me to even confess that I wanted to do it. I built up such resistance to it. But deep down inside, I knew it was meant for me. And I knew I wanted to do it. And I fell in love with it once I started. So I truly believe that having a backup plan is not a good idea, because I think it's one thing to plan for contingencies. You know, when I was in the military, we planned when we were going to fight the enemy, we thought about what was the most likely course of action that the enemy would take against us. We also put a plan together for the most dangerous course of action that the enemy would take against us. And we weighed those and we put a plan together and we put it, but it was like one plan and we had some contingency built in. If this goes wrong, we're going to go do this. But it was one goal that we were working towards.
Right.
It wasn't multiple goals on the objective. We weren't saying, hey, we're going to go, you know, capture, kill this guy over here. And then if we feel like it, even before we get there, you know what, if that doesn't, it doesn't look like it's going to be easy to do, we're going to go over here to capture, kill this guy over in this other building first. And then if that, you know, if we don't like that idea, when we get to this spot, we're going to go ahead and go capture, kill this guy over here. It wasn't like that. It was one goal with a few different branch plans and contingencies plans built into it. Make sense?
Yeah, it does.
So I think that plan Bs are a mistake. And the reason, another reason why I believe this is not because of the story of Hernan Cortez, where he burns the boats and he leads his teams to victory. Okay. It's not because of that, but it's a very good and compelling story that often gets told, you know, that that's where the burn the bridges comes from. It was, you know, I won't go. Okay. So anyways, bottom line is that when you take away the option, a second option or a backup plan or any of that type of stuff, you get super resourceful on how to accomplish your number one plan, your plan A.
Mm-hmm.
Like I guarantee, Justin, and I would really love to hear your perspective right now. I guarantee you're thinking about shit right now that you haven't really thought about in detail. Like there are new ideas coming to you right now of how you can make up for the income that you're potentially losing from the job, the W-2 job. Now you're in this weird situation where you've kind of been in and out of the W-2. So you're a little bit different, where you might have some recurring thoughts that have existed for some time. But what happens when you make a definite decision on your plan A and you don't give yourself another option to go back where you came, your subconscious mind starts delivering options and opportunities to you for you to achieve success. You start thinking creatively about things you never would have thought about before, or you affirm things that you have thought about before. I'll give you a small example. Some time ago, I was on a run. I'm out in the morning run. I do a lot of my best thinkings out there when I'm running. And I was kind of waffling in a decision about something on an area that could grow the business. And I was kind of like, is it a big investment? And I was like, you know what? I don't know if I'm going to do this. I should put the money over here, kind of going through the waffling thing and trying to be indecisive. And I was being indecisive. The bottom line is on that run, I committed to the investment. I said, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to take this investment into the pain cave. I'm going to go into the potential barrier. I'm going all in on this one thing. And I don't care what it does to the bank account. I don't care what it does to X, Y, and Z. I'm going to risk it. And as soon as I made that definite decision, I had some fear that hit me. But I made the committed decision on the run. And all of a sudden, I started thinking about ways to make up for the money that would be put in to the investment. I started thinking about creative ways to increase the revenue in the company, just subconsciously. I didn't tell myself to do this. It just started coming to me. Okay. Imagine you have, I'm not even going to go into numbers, but let's just say you're going to make an investment that's 10 times what you currently have in your accounts. Imagine you decide to make that investment. You're going to make an investment in the tent, which means you're going to borrow money. You're going to do whatever. And you're going to do, you know, throw it all into this thing. And you're going to go against what you actually have in liquid cash. Imagine the fear and the uncertainty and the doubt that's going to swarm you. But also imagine the panic that you're going to go through to replace the money that you're going to spend. it's going to be delivered to you. Now, it's hard. It's really hard for a person to mentally get in that space without being there. You have to put your back up against the wall in order to get that type of creativity, in order to feel that pressure, in order to get that resourcefulness. But I'm telling you, it comes every single time you do it.
Do you find that most people have different levels of like where that point is that they start really freaking out and getting into that mindset?
Everybody's conditioned to a different level, but you know, through experience, through pushing what your ceiling is, or your threshold is for stress and uncertainty, you can actually take on more. I'll give you another example. Dan Bilzerian played poker with millions of dollars. Okay. And he would, It's normal for him to go into a poker game with $20, $30, $40, $50,000 buy-in and then be playing on hands in the millions. And when he was coming up, okay, he would put his whole account on the card hand. Like, imagine you've got a couple million bucks in the bank and you put it all on a game of a poker game. And imagine trying to play it cool. I'm talking a couple million bucks. Like, some people do that with $100 and they're freaking out. They're sweating bullets. But this is what I mean. When you start risking a little bit more, you can tolerate more. You get to expand your capacity. That's the best way of putting it. Right? Like, if I push my limits, like when I used to run 2 miles, that was my capacity. But as soon as I expanded past that, I realized my true capacity. Oh, I could go 5. Oh, I could go 10. Oh, I could go 103. And it's the same thing with risk. It's the same thing with stress. You can always tolerate more. It's just everybody's at a different point currently in their life because they've gotten accustomed to the level of stress that they tolerate.
Okay. So where do you want me to take that now? Because I know we want to get into burnout here. I know we want to get into uncertainty throughout the point.
Well, I think, I mean, either one, but I think uncertainty is the next point because people have a threshold that they can tolerate for uncertainty too. Mm-hmm. So in your example, what'll happen? One of two options will happen. You can tolerate, like, let's just say you're used to going, let's not use you as an example. Let's use somebody else that doesn't have a business. Let's just say they're not used to going a month without a paycheck. Mm-hmm. Well, most people can tolerate some uncertainty for 30 days without a paycheck. I don't know where my paycheck's coming from, but they can tolerate it. They're going to get resourceful. It gives them enough time to find the job. But if you start stretching that person, you keep them without a job for 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, their stress level goes way up, way up. Now, at that point, when they've had enough, when enough's enough, one of two things happens. They either find a way to get what they truly want inside of them, or they revert back to what they know, which most people revert back to what they know. They revert back to what they're familiar with. Okay. It takes a certain special type of thinking to be in that place where you're stressed to the max and continue to think about what you want and not what you don't want. It takes a certain level of willpower and mental discipline.
Yeah.
So I heard Tony Robbins say this one time.
It's just belief, right? Like, so here's what I want to say to that. We're talking about plan A, plan B. And the reason people get so caught up in plan B is probably because they see that most people revert back to what they know, right? And you see that throughout your life. Maybe you've seen, maybe it was your parents, maybe it was a teacher, I don't know, someone that you knew, tried to do something, didn't work out, they reverted back to what they know. People get all hung up on this don't have a plan B thing because they don't want to marry their plan A, pretty much. Yeah. And, you know, or they don't know what will happen if it falls apart, which I've started to realize is less about the plan B and more about in your confidence in your ability to sustain yourself should something go wrong.
Yeah, well, here's newsflash. Everything in your life is going to fall apart. Dude, I'm telling you, you do something for your entire life, it's going to fall apart. You're going to deal with some collateral damage. You're going to deal with some disaster. Guess what? You're in a great relationship now. Guess what? You guys are going to have a fight in the future and it's going to be tough. Guess what? You're in a job you love. Go a little bit longer. COVID's going to hit and it's going to be a disaster. It's going to be stressful. You start a business. Guess what? You're going to have a bad month where you aren't profitable. This is going to happen. So it's actually the illusion that things are going to be okay that puts people at risk. It's delusional. You know? And what ends up happening now for somebody that maybe burns the boats, they quit their job and they lean forward, they're leaning in on plan A only. Mm-hmm. That's a great place to be, because guess what happens when you commit to plan A? Well, like I mentioned, you start getting resourceful about how to get there, but you start accumulating experience and knowledge inside of that domain. So you go 1 month without a W-2 paycheck, you feel a little more confident in yourself. You go 2 months without a W-2 paycheck, you get more confident with yourself, so on and so forth. Now, along the way, you're gaining experience of being in that domain. You go 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, next thing you know, a year, 2 years, whatever it is, you've gotten very accustomed to the ebbs and flows of business, and you've gotten very accustomed to the unknown and to the uncertainty, and to that's become your normal. And you've gained all the experience that you've gained through problem solving and troubleshooting across the last several months or years, and that stuff never goes away. Like, if Justin, if I took your business away right now, took your microphone, took all your connections, all your network, your computer, your photography, your camera, guess what? It would happen. You would be able to get to the exact spot that you're at right now.
Right.
There's no such thing as going back. Mm-hmm. It's impossible, because you have the knowledge and experience, unless you choose to go back the way that you came. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
People forget that. People forget how much value there is in the experience that they gain across the years and the thing that they're doing. That this is why when people argue about you're your best investment, most of the time they can't even explain why, because these people are just trying to sell you some shit. Mm-hmm. But the real reason you're the best investment is because that you are the thing that you carry through life that will not go back down in value.
Yeah.
Sure, you could get sick and ill and sort of that sort of thing, but that's a whole different game once you get there. That's you're not even like your best asset to improve or to thrive in life is you, because it doesn't matter if COVID happens. It doesn't matter if there's a depression. It doesn't matter if there's a recession. It doesn't matter if there's any of that shit. You have the knowledge, you have the experience, and you're the motherfucker that's going to get yourself through it all. And the longer you go on like that, the more confident you're going to be in those times.
Yeah, I'd say I was just watching Hormozy the other day explain that really well about education. Not education from schooling per se, but he was saying that about his dad. You know, they had to flee Iran through all the hoopla that happened over there. And he was like, one of the best things that happened was that my dad had his education. You know, that's the one thing that cannot be taken away from you, no matter what. They can take your money, they can take your assets, they can take everything, get you out of the fucking country.
And you know what's better than education? Knowledge.
Yeah.
The reason why I say knowledge like that is because knowledge means knowing. There is a difference between understanding something and knowing something. If the education system, the academic system, teaches you to understand something, they teach you to store information, memorize the formula for this math equation and take the test on it, memorize these dates and times and blah, blah, blah. Store all this information on your head, cram for the test, and then brain dump it all, and hopefully you remember some in the future. That's what the education system teaches you, right? But that doesn't create knowing. It creates a false sense of knowing, because these same people, they consume and they read and they think that they understand. They become very, very confident in something that they've never done before, which is a very dangerous recipe. When you have a high level of confidence and an actual low level of understanding, practical understanding, you're a dangerous person, because you think you know it all and you're going to tell people do stuff that you actually don't have any experience doing. It's very dangerous. Now, there is value there. You can learn and read and adopt perspectives and provide insights and all that sort of thing. But what I'm trying to convey is the sweet spot in actual, like having the actual information and applying it versus thinking you're smarter than you actually are when you don't have the experience. Now that's information, right? That's education. Storing information is. Knowing is when you've taken something that you think you understand and you applied it and you can do it. So riding a bike is a great example. I can read about riding a bike every single day. I could probably memorize all the steps that it would take for you to ride a bike, but I don't know how to do it until I get on the damn thing and I ride. But once I ride on it, I make some mistakes, I fail, I fall, I crash, I freaking, you know, go from training wheels to two wheels. And eventually I land it and I can ride the bike. Now I know how to ride the bike. And guess what happens? Time goes on. Maybe I stop riding bikes. But when I get back on one, I'm very familiar and I know how to do it. That experience and that knowledge never fades. It never disappears. It's with you for life. Okay. So again, point being is that during times of uncertainty, the thing that you can leverage to really get confidence in yourself and belief in yourself is the knowledge that you've gained. Not the education, the knowledge, the knowing. And when you leverage that, that's where you'll thrive.
It's a mic drop moment, Jeremiah.
Bro, freaking fired up over here. It's probably this, probably this protein bar.
No, it's that bar you keep trying to fucking like sneak behind the microphone.
It's just so good. It's so I'm eating a battle bar. We don't have sponsors, by the way, guys. I don't do sponsors. This is just a friend of mine's company and they're delicious. It's called Battle Bars. This is the s'more one. 16 grams of protein, 220 calories, veteran owned, which is one of my favorite parts. But they've actually built this as a healthy alternative to protein bars that are out there on the market, because a lot of them are just candy bars that are disguised as protein bars.
I want to get into this burnout thing. Not the best segue we're ever going to do, but you were talking to me a little bit before the podcast that this was what was coming from your end of the, yeah. What's going on. So,
well, the thing is like this whole episode is about happiness, right?
Yeah.
The more uncertainty you can handle, the happier you'll be. Okay. That is very true. It's been true in my life. It's been true in everybody else's. And I think that everybody needs to spend some time getting clear about the things in their life that they need to cut out. Because if you're fearing cutting those things out and living in some uncertainty, you're destined for misery. You're destined for a shitty, poor life. Okay. So I just want to recap on that. Now, the last little ingredient here that we're going to talk about to create happiness in your life is this topic of burnout. It's a little bit of a controversial topic, but burnout is something that I see a lot of people, one, hiding behind. But then I also see people experiencing true burnout. And if we want to accept the idea that burnout is a real thing, then it does take away from our happiness. So we want to attack burnout. We want to figure out a way to get to not allow burnout to overtake us, whether it's real or whether it's imaginary. So I started talking about this earlier today. I got a long discussion about whether or not it was even a real thing, or whether burnout was a figment of the imagination. You know, and I had to ask myself, well, what does it actually mean? What does burnout actually mean? What's the definition? And couldn't find a clinical definition. I found some people with some opinions, but in general, the argument was that burnout is when you're experiencing signs and symptoms of extreme physical, emotional, fatigue. Exhaustion. Some sites like WebMD and shit like that were saying that it sometimes takes like 3 to 4 months to pull out of. I read an article as well that there was this guy who said that there's a misconception that you can't get burnout from a 9 to 5. And he was like, that's not true at all. He's like, you can absolutely get burnout from 9 to 5. In fact, humans are only really effective for 3 to 4 hours out of the day. So there's actually no point and even having them at work for 40 hours in a week. Okay. Now, my point with all of this is that I think burnout's a really hard subject for me to decide whether or not I agree with its presence and its effect on society, or whether it's a thing that we've been accustomed to believing. And therefore, it's become like a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's been like a figment that has pulled us down. It's a belief that we've adopted because we were told it exists, right?
Yeah.
What are you about to say? You about to say something?
No, my jaw's being weird.
Just making weird faces.
Yeah, I know.
Well, okay. So let's just start this discussion, because I get a lot of people hit me up and they ask me, what do I do to avoid burnout? And I'm always like a little bit challenged with answering that, because deep in my soul, I don't feel like I've ever burnt out. But when I look at the definition of it, it says extreme physical and emotional fatigue, exhaustion, not feeling motivated like you want to do the thing. When I look at that definition, I'm like, man, that's like every day. I'm like, that's
I'm always day. Burnt out.
I mean, am I always burnt out? I'm like, it's always hard to enroll yourself and get yourself going and motivated and all that type of stuff. And eventually, you get your stride throughout the day. You do something to get you going and it puts that little fuel, little fire in you. And then that carries you through. So I don't know. What's your thoughts on this word burnout, Justin? What are your thoughts when you think of that?
Now I'm having all sorts of thoughts since you're saying all of this or I try to think of where it applies in my life too, because it feels like you do burn out of some things a lot fucking quicker than you do others. When I had a career in banking, I felt burnt out of that all the time. So I just didn't want to be there, for lack of a better way to put it. An 8-hour day, you're toasted. You're fried.
And this is something that came up earlier. Is that burnout or is that being fed up?
Right. Good point. I mean, it seems more like it's being fed up.
Yeah,
I don't even want to say fed up though. Just like, I don't know.
Stressed, irritated, but is that burnout? I don't know, because here's my thoughts on this is the argument that I have of why burnout could not be true. It could be a hoax of something that has been put on us, right? And the reason why is because burnout is basically like a depletion of energy and motivation. But humans have so much energy and motivation inside of them,
right?
Like tons, right? Like, you have enough electricity running through you to power a small country. Okay. That's a lot of electricity, a lot of energy. And not only that, but on your worst day, if you're in a job that you hate and you're going through quote unquote burnout, you're feeling fatigued, unmotivated, emotionally drained, you can't handle whatever life is handing you, and I drop $10 million on your desk and I say, hey man, guess what? Happy birthday, bro. You're like, it's not my birthday. I go, I know, this is for you. You're going to be like, hell yeah. Happy freaking birthday, man.
Yeah.
And the energy is going to come shooting back through you. But if you enroll into the idea that you're experiencing burnout and you don't have that money in front of you, guess what? You feel depleted. You feel more burdened and more worn down than you might actually be. Okay. So I think that there's this like weird fine line between burnout and just being fed up. Like, I think if you are burnout comes from being trapped and not having a place to go and escape. But here's the other problem with that is if you feel like you need to escape, you actually just put yourself into a shitty situation. You put yourself into a prison cell. You're doing it to yourself. You're just a glutton for punishment. So stop putting yourself in a shitty situation.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? So I think that I'll get your take on that little segment and then we keep going.
I'm thinking that I don't think I've ever even felt burnt out while I was doing one thing. I think there's something to it about when you're trying to do multiple things. Well, even, you're just talking about everybody has different aspects of their life, right? Your health, your wealth, your relationships. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
And I think burnout for me has generally come, or that feeling, whatever we're going to call it, maybe it was fed up, but it's always come more so from when like I'm really stressed in at least two of them at the same time, if not all three of them at the same time.
Yeah.
And I don't know where to put my attention, and maybe my business is starting to take off, like my wealth is kind of under control now, but my relationships are falling apart and my health is falling apart. That's when I start to feel like, oh, maybe I should take my foot off the gas with the, like I'm burning out with the business, evidently, because these other two areas of my triangle are falling apart.
Yeah. Well, I think in most cases of burnout, what's really happening is that people aren't prioritizing what's actually important to them. They're not making decisions that could help them relieve the burnout. That's what I think it comes down to. I think that everybody is in control, because when I think, and I just have, I think somebody was pointing it out earlier to me today that I might just have like a stigma with the word burnout where I associate it as weak, right? And I don't want to say that I'm weak. So I say, you know what? Burnout doesn't exist. And it's kind of like this. toxic masculinity type of masochistic. My point, I guess, with all that is, I don't know if I'm right or wrong about any of this burnout. All I know is that this is my perspective, And when I look at where I'm at in life and I look at the masses, I'm on a different, like, I'm playing a different game than a lot of people. You know what I'm saying? Like, when you look at the bell curve of society, most people, you know, our society is built so that people can have a stable life. They go and get a 9-to-5 that should provide them food, water, shelter, security, get them Wi-Fi in their house, some television, a TV, like a very comfortable life. That's the bell curve that our country was built around, right? But I'm not trying to have an ordinary life. I'm trying to have an extraordinary life. I want to be an outlier. I want to be this person that has some, and there's trade-offs there, right? Like, if I'm going to try to be on the right-hand side of the bell curve on this outlier with an exceptional life, a big life, and all these different types of things, well, guess what? That comes at a trade-off. I'm going to miss out on some of the great things that the average life has. The work-life balance, the family time, the idea of a stable paycheck and stuff like that. Like, but I'm also going to win over here in ways that they're not going to have, right? Like, I'm going to have a bigger life and more freedom maybe later on in my life. Like, I'm going to sacrifice some up front, but later on, it's going to be bigger and better. But my point is, like, my perspective comes from that approach. So if maybe burnout doesn't exist to me because I don't want to let it in to my life and my space simply because I'm trying to push my limits and my ability so hard. You know, for a lot of people don't want to find their true limits. So it actually sounds kind of nice to say, oh, I'm dealing with burnout, let me cool off.
Mm-hmm.
Me, I don't like to enroll in that idea. I like to literally push myself until I find the actual boundary, the actual limitation, you know, and I'm not scared of emptying the tank. I want to find it because I've been wrong about where that the capacity of my tank over my entire life. So, but regardless of your stance on burnout, I think that managing it is part of happiness. So whether you think it's a real thing or whether you don't, whether you enroll into the idea or you don't, you have to, as an individual that wants to be happy, you have to come to terms with what you believe about burnout and you have to manage it. Me, I enroll in the idea that it's not that big of a deal and that it doesn't really exist because it's a figment of my imagination. It's based off of perspective. It's based off of how I'm perceiving my life and the demands on my life and myself. If I'm feeling stressed because I'm not earning the amount of money that I want to earn, or if I want to, like, whatever the situation is, that's all imagination. It's all, like, made up stuff inside of my head. And I can still be happy when all that adversity is going on. So I don't have to get burnt out. I can just choose happiness even in a shitty situation. Okay. Now, if you do believe, and, you know, you maybe you're feeling some demands of life, you're feeling like work is putting too much on you, you got kids to deal with and all these type of things. Well, if you're in that type of situation and you feel like you're burnt out or on the verge of it by your definition and relative perception, then it's probably time for some decisions. It's probably time to course correct a little bit. Maybe if it's a job like Justin had, it's time to quit that job and walk away from it and find a place where you're going to be happy and thriving versus sad and miserable and dying. That's my thoughts on burnout, dude. I don't know what else you got on that.
You want to talk a little bit just about being tired too. Something you've always taught as long as I've known you is basically working when you're tired. Can you explain the purpose behind doing that? Like, you do that very, I don't want to say objectively, but like at your events and stuff, very deliberately starting hard shit when people are tired.
Yeah. So one of the ways that I kind of suspend my belief about burnout is by proving to myself that it's really a figment of my imagination and that it's a made up concept, right? And it is, but it isn't. What I'm saying is that it's imaginary. Like, if I'm feeling burnout, it's because of how I'm processing the information that's around me.
Yeah.
Okay. So I like to test my limitations and not conform to what the box that I'm put in. So like Conquer Quest events, we start at 9 p.m. at night, and that's when a lot of people are getting ready to quit for the day. Well, that's when we start for the day. So that in itself shows people that they're able to do more than they actually give themselves credit for. They can go further. And I like to do this periodically throughout my life in random different ways. One of the ways that I did it at Conquer Quest recently was, like, after we hadn't slept for who knows how many hours it had been, 40 hours or whatever, at the end of, maybe it was less than that, but either way, it was a lot of not sleeping. At the end of the day, my suffering Saturday was to read. Like if you've ever tried reading when you've been sleep deprived and like been up for multiple days, it's really, really difficult. It's really difficult. And so anyways, by doing that, it allows me to do something where I think I'm done and I've reached my capacity and push on further. I do that periodically in all different types of life. I did it a lot at the Ranger Regiment. The Ranger Regiment is what really taught me how to do that, because we would do these long missions and we would do multiple days, and we were just like, we would do these raids, and I was on the staff. I remember when this first occurred to me, I was on the staff of Ranger Regiment. We were doing these training missions. It was just go, go, go. And my job was to basically help evaluate the platoons that were going out and doing their missions. I was basically like an assistant to one of the main instructors that was out there, okay, or the lane walkers. But it was like we were evaluating all the platoons across multiple days, and we were only sleeping like 30 minutes to 1 hour max every, like, I don't know, maybe like day or two, whatever the hell, right? It was a power nap here, wake up, holy shit, I'm freaking panicking because I think I'm late. No, I'm good. I'm going to the freaking formation. Okay, I'm going. Do that for another 12, 24 hours, fall asleep for 30 minutes, for an hour, wake up, do it again. And at the end of those training missions, when everybody was completely exhausted, the troops that were running the mission and the instructors were like, all right, guys, before you go and bed down, we're going to do an after action review. Which means now that we're done on the mission, we're going to go talk about it for another hour, and we're going to sit in seats and review everything that we did out there. So basically, we're going to take the work that we did and we're going to go a step further. When you should, we could just go do the AAR tomorrow or the next day or the week after that, right? We can put it off, punt it. But no, they attached it to the work and they went further than what was expected. They did it right then. And we always did that even overseas, doing high value target raids as well, right after the mission. So that's my stance on pushing your limits and finding ways to kind of grow outside of what you're used to, you know, doing things when you're tired.
I like it.
I do, bringing it all back to dealing with uncertainty and burnout and decision-making. I mean, doing little things like challenging yourself is a great way to figure out where you actually burn out at. Now, I'm not encouraging everybody to go out there and like work yourself to exhaustion, manage more than you can. Like, I'm not advocating for that. I'm just sharing my perspective around things, because there's other people that I like being around like-minded people. And when I find somebody that I can see eye to eye with that agrees with the things that I'm talking about with uncertainty, burnout, and decision-making, I want to hear more information like that. So I'm basically, you know, sharing my perspective to reciprocate, to give that to somebody else that thinks the same way. And if you're more of the an easygoing type of person, you like the 9-to-5 life, like, listen, like, that's not, none of this is a knock on you. I'm just trying to give a little bit of perspective that may be helpful in making everybody here more happy, right? Really what we're talking about was those three things. We talked about, we need to manage uncertainty a little bit better. If we do that, we're going to be more happy. We need to manage burnout better. If we do that, we're going to be happy. And then the last thing is, we need to make hard decisions. We need to cut losses when we don't want them around in our life anymore. And if we do that, we will be more happy. And I think those are principles that everybody can fight and die for.
Yeah.
Good. Anything else?
I think I'm good.
Cool. It was a good talk, man. I think we covered a lot of great stuff today. Keys to happiness. We talked about burnout, uncertainties, decision-making, cutting stuff that's like dead weight to you. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in today. I know we missed last week's episode, but we had some technical issues. And I hope you find value in this episode. If you did, you guys know the deal. Do us a solid and share it with a friend, okay? With that being said, that's all I got for you guys today. Until next time, be the leader.
I need some motivation. Motivation. Every day I try a little harder, but my dedication. Keep my head way, way above the water. Crying myself when I yell at the wall. Begging to run, but I needed to crawl. I see the finish line up ahead. Trying to get traction from all of this tread. I am a king. I am a queen. I am more than the people can see. I am strong when I'm needing to be. Vulnerability's nothing to me. You can try, but I'm unshakable. My successes is never debatable. I'm chameleon. I'm so interchangeable. Here's to you and all that you are capable. You gotta go hard, better get it. You gotta go hard, better get it.